Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, Series 1, Episode 7. It's our first Christmas special. It's Christmas Cracker. Would you like to say hello, Jamie?
Hello, Jamie.
Very good. So, what do we think? I know that obviously we're going to go through the details, but just your overall initial impression. What are your thoughts?
It was very story building. It was a lot of classic things that we think about these three together. They obviously don't, they're not always in the whole show together, but it's the first part of Only Fools and Horses. It's how we all start thinking about it and learning it. And it was just very world building, I think, for the characters. Most of all, obviously, Grandad. There were some real classic granddaddy moments in this for sure.
So we should probably address the elephant in the room, which is we were completely wrong about what episode this was going to be. I don't know why, but I think we both just thought Christmas special and we instantly went to the dad returning episode. And we both were like, that's weird. It seems like it shouldn't be this early at the end of the first series. And we were right about that because it isn't. It's not until the end of the third series. So, oops. This is...
Do you know what the episode's called? Can you remember?
I was looking earlier, it is Thicker Than Water.
Thicker Than Water, that's it, yeah.
Okay. Which is no reference to Christmas, but the name, but it is like, the whole episode is very Christmassy, yeah. But I think, I'll be honest, this episode as a whole thing completely just had slipped my mind. Apart from the dinner, it wasn't a lot that really held in my memory. It wasn't like one of the real memorable episodes for me, but, let's just start going through it and we can talk about it. I mean, obviously this opening couple of scenes is pretty memorable and is pretty classic, as you say. Stick a bunny in me pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. So we open up in the flat, as we often do. Rodney lounging around on that sofa, which he is wont to do, and reading a body language book. Thoughts?
I guess it's just it was that kind of era where a lot of people were, not that it's changed, but a lot of people weren't so good at chatting up women or wanted to have any help they could to find the best ways to make themselves successful, like Dell.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's really... really weird, that kind of thing. Like, I know I had a friend at university who read The Game, which was another very famous, like, picking up women book. And I just find that whole thing very odd as a thing to do. The idea that there are these tips and tricks, like a poker game, that if you pick up will make you better at women, I just think is just ridiculous. And that is very well proven later when Rodney tries to employ some of the techniques that he apparently learns in this book.
So the first thing that I was really noticing was when Del comes in and Rodney's having a bit of a chat with him about the smells and everything coming from the kitchen. One of the things he said, which I wasn't sure, he said the potatoes look like anthracite.
I'm not embarrassed to say I googled that as well.
Oh, you did? Oh, cool. Yeah. So, just a little, you know, little fun fact, bit of edutainment. Yeah, that's what I said. Anthracite, for those that don't know, is a hard coal. And is generally considered to be the highest ranking of coals with the fewest impurities.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
I was curious.
Yeah, it was funny. As Dale came in, he started to walk around the flat a bit more. And then is when I suddenly started to see all the Christmas decorations. Because I thought it was weird how actually when it first opened up, I wasn't noticing that so much. I don't think the tree was in the initial shot. Or much of the decorations, it wasn't until Dale comes in and starts walking around the room, as he does, that you kind of start to see all the little bits and pieces, like the table is set as nicely as it can be. And they have this very tacky, silver, quite tragic-looking tree. Yeah, they're certainly not going all out on the Christmas decorations, but there's some token decorating, can you say?
No, I think if you strip it back, it's a really sad place to be. Like, there's no... They haven't got a greater family. It's just three blokes in a flat. One of them can't cook, one of them's got no money, and... just generally, it's a pretty horrible dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, it is all about Grandad's cooking, which is being talked about a lot, and they're all very worried. I mean, Rodney's talked about going on hunger strike, which he's done before. Hunger strike seems like a very 80s concept to me. I think that's the thing that was talked about a lot more back then. Like, people did hunger strike protests, but that's not a thing I've even heard of anyone mentioning a hunger strike in years. But that they know, well, that's not going to work. So they have to get ready for dinner. One thing that does happen first, though, is Granddad comes out of the kitchen just to greet Del. And Del gives him a gift, to which Granddad replies...
Here, hang on. Here you go, look. There's a score for you. Little Christmas present, all right?
Oh, cheers, Del. That's very nice of you. I didn't get you nothing. I don't agree with the commercialisation of a Christian festival.
This made me chuckle, because it's obviously a thing that has been around for a long time, and I just thought it was a weirdly kind of factually interesting thing I'd heard about recently. That, did you know that people were complaining about the commercialisation of Christmas back in, like, Civil War England times? Like, this is not a modern thing with TV and radio and adverts. Like, it's been a thing for hundreds of years that people complain about Christmas being too much about partying and commercialisation and money, and not enough about the original Christian values. Like, that.
It's like most things, isn't it? Like, most pagan or things that we celebrate now originally came from something like religion, and then has morphed on from there and just become an excuse to get people together and have fun and do whatever. But yeah, I'm not fussed. I'm not overly religious, so if people want to get fun about it either way, I love Christmas, so.
Yeah, and it's definitely not for the celebrating of the birth of our Lord, let's just put it that way.
We'll fast forward to where the food's being served. We are faced with a horrifically pink chicken.
Yeah.
Which
there's really a lot of pink in there.
Yeah, it looks good. Like, I mean, as in the prop looks good for how bad
it is. Yeah, the prop
is.
Looks good. It looks horrific.
Granddad offers some gravy, which looks like it's thicker than tar. Just sort of like spooning it on.
It's like the gravy that you have the next day that's been cold in the fridge overnight.
Yeah,
you know, as you kind of put it on, and it's like,
it's not been warmed up yet.
It's all congealed. Yeah, it doesn't look good.
Bobby and I could probably do a whole podcast just on food. We're massive foodies. I'm sure it will come up at different points. But obviously for us being somewhat obsessed with some nice food, that was quite hard to look at, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially Christmas dinner. Like, we've cooked a few Christmas dinners together, and it is quite an epic event. Occasion. Yeah, it is an event, and you know, the things that I look forward to all year. I cannot imagine how tragic it is to have your Christmas dinner, the thing that I look forward to all year, being something you are worried about and not looking forward to, and when it's delivered, it's even worse than your very low expectations.
Didn't you have a really bad Christmas dinner around an ex-girlfriend's? Did that happen?
Yeah, that happened once. That was pretty, yeah.
That's a brilliant story.
Well, it was just, I think it was the thing that it was Aunt Bessie's potatoes and Bisto gravy. Like, in fact, there was no gravy on the table. We were all serving up. And then it was like, oh, I've forgotten the gravy. I'll go put the kettle on and get the Bisto out the fridge, the Bisto out the cupboard. And I was just like, this is, no, all sorts of wrong.
Oh, that's hellish. Anyway, enough about us. So we get somewhat of a barrage of French phrases over this bit of talking. So we actually get a hat trick, so I'll play a couple of dings here.
That'll be three dings.
Yep, three.
Not a couple.
Whatever, yeah. Three. So the first one is Sacre Bleu Chef, obviously saying that Grandad is not a Sacre Bleu Chef. So some people say Sacre Bleu is like, oh my God, but I think damn it is probably the closest translation. Bain Marie, he says when he's talking about the wine, whilst drinking the wine. Do you know what a Bain Marie is?
Is it like a Bain Marie? Is it like the
way of heat? No,
I've no idea.
Bain Marie is one of these hot baths that they put the tins of food in if you go to a buffet.
Right.
You know, you've got the water and the tray, and that's
okay,
it.
So it's not
called a Bain Marie. Yeah.
It's still putting stuff in hot water, but yeah, it's not bam right, yeah. I think. Yeah, yeah.
And then quite a funny quote, actually, was when he's talking about the guy trying to fob him off a table wine.
Anyway, I pulled him up a bit sharpish, though. I said, oi, John, I said, I don't want none of your table wine, I said. I said, you get down here in that cellar and you give me a bottle of your vin ordinaire.
Which, quite clearly, is ordinary wine. Or cheap table wine, basically not sparkling or fortified wine. So he's...
Yeah, I mean, table wine, by definition, is like moderately good. You know, all right for the table, four meals, as opposed to ordinary wine, which is cheap, like, by definition.
I think is table wine is generally considered to be the cheaper, one of the cheapest offerings.
No, ordinary wine is the cheapest. That's part of the joke, because he gets offered table wine and he says, no, I want ordinary wine, which is worse.
Okay.
So that's it. Table wine is, like, moderate on the scale.
Okay.
Did you also... I mean, this is kind of by the by, really, but did you think the red wine was really, really, like, light in colour, like cherryade?
Oh, yeah, clearly it's Ribena.
Yeah, I mean, just put more Ribena in it. I mean, yeah. It doesn't need to be that light.
Then again, it was Vinaud de Nair, so, I mean, it could have, this could is have true. Been the best quality Vinaud de Nair around.
But yeah, it was weirdly light in colour, but yeah, you know. I also, I have to just mention that I like that they're all wearing the classic paper cracker hats, which is an absolute must at any English Christmas table. I think that would be a fail if they didn't, if they weren't. Because if you are the best, but you don't
ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. It's funny how when you, because we're doing the podcast, we obviously write notes and we're not dissecting stuff, but we're certainly looking for things to talk about. Just things like the chicken being that pink. I don't remember looking at it before and seeing it was that pink, and just funny little details that you find. There was a quote when they're talking about Brenda and Terry.
Who's Brenda and Terry?
Who's Brenda and Terry?
Yeah.
Who's Brenda and Terry, Rodney?
I don't know.
What are you going on about, you old div?
Well, we got a Christmas card from them. It said, love from Brenda and Terry and the kids, Shirley, Shane and Sean.
Yeah, that was from Brenda and Terry.
Oh, no! Who is Brenda and Terry?
Well, it's Shirley, Shane and Sean's mum and dad, isn't it?
Oh. Did we send them one back?
Where can we send them one back? We don't know who they are, let alone where they live.
I just thought, for some reason, this reminded me of, like, a Two Ronnies or a Morecambe and Wise sort of sketch. Just, like, the way that it sort of rolled off each other. Like, who's Brenda and Terry? Oh, Shirley, Shane and Sean's mum and dad.
Yeah.
It was something very... to and fro about it. I thought it was a very clever comedy moment from it.
Yeah, true. It is very like that, like a two-man bit on stage. It was, yeah, I enjoyed that. That was fun. Straight, obviously, unsurprisingly, as any family like this, around a dinner table, it gets quite, they start jibing and, like, taking the piss out of Rodney and stuff like that, and Rodney's throwing a strop on, as he normally does. Like, he literally throws his cutlery down at one point because he is a child in a massive gangly body. But then it all kind of comes to a head when they realise that the turkey still has the giblets inside a plastic bag, inside the turkey, and that's how it was cooked, and obviously that's not very pleasant.
One of the best things for this, or something that I noticed, and if you're watching this after we've spoken about it, definitely have a look. It's the subtle look that David Jason gives. So the reason they find out is because David Jason jokes, saying, you did take the giblets out, didn't you? But just before he speaks, he sort of has this shifty left look and right, which is just opening up the gag. It's like the feed line. You can just see that he's about to wind them up. And I just think, as far as acting's concerned, it's a really, really... It's super subtle, but it's just great. You just know that you're getting prepared to laugh before he's even said it. And then everything unfolds that it's a lot worse than what he actually thought anyway.
Yeah, I think the whole, like, the banter at the table is classic, something everyone can relate to. It's and that's, of course, the idea. But the whole, the quality of the meal and this whole giblets thing, he's getting in there and he's pulling it out. He's saying there's, like, sage and onion and malt and plastic and this and that, and it's all inside the turkey. It's crazy stuff. But then, quite quickly, Grandad gets emotional, which is a little bit sad, like, you hear it in his voice. It is a bit sad. And very quickly, they're like, okay, let's stop taking the piss and make a big deal out of it, and let's kind of, you know, move on to dessert, because that's going to be something better. And then
Before he brings out the dessert, there is another French phrase in there while they're having a little talk with Grandad, which is a fait accompli, is something that he says, maybe not.
Oh, fait accompli, yeah.
Well, it's funny because what he says is compas, but the only thing I could find was complet, but I did find two French people who had written a fait compas somewhere, but then couldn't find a way to translate it. So the only way then, so I found out something else, which is loosely list, basically is something that has already happened or been decided before those affected hear about it.
So following that pretty horrible dinner, we then have another scene cut, but then the third scene is again still in the flat. And it's feeling a little bit like draggy by this point, because they're just sitting around the flat, not much has happened, but then that's kind of deliberate. And this is, again, a very quintessential Christmas scene of someone's fallen asleep in front of the telly on the sofa, in this case Del, and Rodney is just mooching around, bored, and to the point where he's literally just shouting bored out the window, which massively reminded me of the Young Ones, where they have an episode called Boring, and the same thing happens when I think it's Vivian, isn't it, that's walking around going boring, boring, boring. But yeah, that just made me chuckle. That's definitely a position I've been at Christmas after dinner. Like, some people have fallen asleep, other people are bored. But that's, yeah, that is Christmas. That always happens. So the other thing that I found interesting in that scene was when Rodney then complains about the circus being on telly and so Del's to switch over to the other channel then. And then there is somehow a circus also on the other channel. And I actually didn't check if there is still only two channels at this point, but I think there is. How is it possible that both of them have scheduled circuses at the same time? I mean, I know it's Christmas, but come on.
Do they show circuses at Christmas now? Is that a thing that I'm not aware of?
Oh, God, I have no idea. I've never, don't think I've ever noticed a circus on telly at Christmas. It might be a thing. But apparently it's enough of a thing to double up on it. Like, apparently no one wants to watch anything but a circus at that point on Christmas Day.
Well, this is quite funny. There's a few random mistakes, actually, in this whole episode. A couple of dialogue line mistakes, which they just very quickly brush over and carry on. But they misspeak or stumble on their words, which is interesting. Very rare to see, but it happens twice. There is also the coat that falls down when Delboy comes in. But again, it's the middle of a very long scene, so they don't, he just carries on.
I wondered about that. Do you think that just happened and they just left it because it goes, it doesn't matter? Because yeah, it's not sure. Like it's funny or anything.
No, I think there's just a couple of mistakes in there in this one.
It's a weird thing to just leave in, though. Like, I know it's a long scene and maybe just thought, fuck it. But, like, it's not funny.
He probably noticed. They would have carried on the scene and then after recording, they would have noticed it. And they wouldn't have gone, oh, we're not going to re-record that.
You reckon no one noticed?
Yeah, the cameraman. What's he going to do? Oh, everyone stop. Stop recording a second. I've just seen a coat fall down. But it's erroneous.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Exactly that.
No, you don't get but anyway, this is quite a long scene, and it's quite funny that they're arguing about going out or not going out, and Del's going on, and it all comes to a head. And just as it comes to a head, enter Grandad, but he enters from the porch, which means he's been mental. Sat there for about 5 minutes straight.
At least, yeah. I literally wrote, "Where the fuck has Grandad come from?" Like, that. It's so weird. Like, I don't understand why they'd write it like that. Why doesn't he just come out of his room and walk across? It's not like he doesn't. He carries on chatting to them. It makes no sense that he'd be standing there. That's just really weird. I mean, I guess it's, I don't, is it funnier? Maybe it's funnier. But
I think it's a quicker entrance onto the middle of the stage, maybe.
Just walk through it. I mean, not a big stage. Very weird. Very, very weird. Okay, so here's another thing. Christmas Day, not uncommon to pop down the pub on a Christmas Day afternoon and meet up with like local friends and stuff, but to go out in the evening drinking, that just feels wrong on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I did kind of think, I wondered if like I'd ever gone out at Christmas, Christmas Day, or if I knew of places that were open. Like, I don't, that I can, that I know of, but I'm sure if you tried hard enough there'd be somewhere.
Because there's a lot of people there. They go in, it's a proper like bar. And I just can't imagine going anywhere but maybe a local pub. The idea that bars are open on Christmas night is just very weird, but, you know,
yeah, just a couple whatever. Of single ladies, just don't, neither of them have families, they've just gone out on the pool.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
As you do.
Several of them as well. That's where it all comes from, it's a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of... So, yeah, we should probably say this is what happens. Grandad says he's buggering off out after lots of arguing about the fact that Rodney wants to go out, but they can't because they all need to stay in the flat together and largely for just supporting Grandad. But then he decides to scarf her, so they decide to do the same. And so they turn up at the Monte Carlo Club, and the first thing I noticed was something that was missing, I mentioned in a previous episode. Del is wearing white shoes.
The white shit. It's funny, I don't really recall you mentioning it. I remember that it was, I'm pretty sure it's Go West Young Man, but I can't remember.
It's got to be because they were going out. I think I remember he was wearing like the big collar, and I said it was very Miami Vice, but the one thing he was missing to complete the outfit was white shoes.
I didn't even realise that his shoes were in shot. Fair play.
Yeah, they're very briefly in shot, and actually Rodney mentions it later as well, that he's like, and you're wearing white shoes, he's talking about how flashy he's looking. But as soon as he walked in, you just, for the first 2 seconds of the shot, you get the full body and you see Dell in white shoes. I'm like, yes, that's what was missing last time.
Great. Yeah, and Dell obviously looks fly as ever, like a male peacock. I was trying to think, like, even then or now, if I saw a little dude walk into a bar like that, what would I think? I'd probably think prick, but...
Oh, definitely. I mean, I don't know about then, because it was... It was a fashion at the time. I mean, if you did the exact thing now, I mean, a bright red shirt and white shoes is quite something to try and pull off.
The other thing that comes to mind is, like, proper gangster. Like, just...
Yeah, there's like, kind of a Scarface element to it, isn't it?
Yeah, just, like, if I thought someone was that ballsy coming in, especially with all the gold, like, you wouldn't think wide boy. You'd just think, like, this guy's, dangerous. Like, top of the local fucking firm. Like, Jesus, yeah, dangerous. I mean, he is a little bit dangerous, but... but interesting.
They're wearing suits, and people don't wear suits on night out anymore, which is, you know, arguably a shame sometimes. They look great, but...
Unless they're Rodney's one, which is quite horrible.
It is pretty bad, isn't it?
It's like he's gone for a job interview.
Looks like he's borrowed his dad's suit to go to a job interview.
I made a really cool note here. I don't know if you noticed it. You probably did, because it's one of the cooler things in the episode. Did you know what he ordered for the drink?
Oh, do you know what? I actually didn't. I know how much the drinks cost.
Yeah, that's my lead into the fact. So it's Remy Martin and Cream Soda.
Remy Martin?
Yeah, Remy Martin.
Remind me what Remy Martin is.
Like, it's like a brandy, isn't it?
I'm not sure, that's what I'm asking. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's a brandy.
And yeah, because I saw it was like a short, so it wasn't like a cocktail.
Yeah, definitely a short.
But yes, it was soda.
But maybe that would taste a bit like Southern Comfort.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, and so we both know how much it cost. It cost 98p, which was a bargain.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind they paid £7 for the cocktail and half a lager when they were up west.
Oh yeah, and he said he paid £4 for it as well.
Like they made it was a huge thing. We spoke about it at length.
I think he said £3 actually. We paid £3 where I come from.
But this was a much more reasonable bar, despite being open on Christmas night. They're giving away drinks, and he gives him a pound note as well. Did you notice?
Yeah, this is one of the things I actually researched, because the barman's look at keep the change is like, well, cheers, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah,
and I was like, interesting, because to me it looked like a fiver.
So but I thought it must be a pound note.
Otherwise, it's not a good thing. So, do you know when the pound note was in circulation?
Oh, shit. Okay, so when did they stop having pound notes? Mid-80s? 85?
Pretty much exactly. That's very, very good knowledge. I actually thought the pound note was discontinued long before then, but pound note came into effect in 1797 and continued until 1984. The note was fully withdrawn in 1988 in favour of the £1 coin.
Nice.
Yeah, crazy. I didn't think they still had £1 notes then. I wish I might buy a £1 note. That's cool.
Good luck finding one. I guess it's got to be around. I wonder what they cost.
I was listening to a podcast the other day about the currency of some Zimbabwe. They had some massive currency crisis, and their currency was worth nothing, and they ended up printing notes genuinely worth $1 trillion Zimbabwean dollars whatever it's called. So you can go on eBay and for a fiver you can go, as in 5 English pounds, you can go and buy it's discontinued now, but you can go and buy a $1 trillion note of
that would be quite a cool thing to have
tender. Yeah, isn't that cool?
Nice. Yeah, it got a lot of tangent. So I guess moving on, there's another little scene break here, but we don't go anywhere. So they're at the club and they're kind of settling in. They're talking about maybe trying to pick up some women, but they're not really having much success, let's put it that way. Eventually they decide they like the look of these couple of girls, so they're going to go and have a wander up, and Rodney starts to psych himself up, because Del Boy says it's about time he did the legwork. the psyching himself up is pretty weird. Not really sure what he's doing. And then he refers to his little book and then goes for a wander. I don't know how to describe that walk. I think Dell has a pretty good description, does he not?
Body language? I thought you were limping.
I was talking to him.
Talking? You were lisping? What were you supposed to be saying then?
Well, the walk was saying pelvis, virility. It was saying, now here comes a man who's got natural masculinity and maturity.
Oh, from back here it was saying, here comes a man with his truss on back to front.
I think that's quite a funny walk. I don't know how this would be described in a book. Like, you know, shuffle slightly with the left foot with a shoulder pulled in and a look on your face like you're sucking a sour sweet. Like, what's the...
Yeah, I don't know how you describe that in a book.
But it's funny for someone who is clearly nervous about doing it to have no nervousness about going up looking like he's got some sort of cerebral palsy or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he's 100% committed to the move. As poor as it is, he clearly really believes in the move. And I think the only thing worse than approaching girls with a move like that is then the fact that he gets called back by Dell, which obviously he's furious about. But the way he gets kind of called back, I mean, that's just the absolute worst. How do you ever go near them again all night?
Especially when he goes, oi, soppy!
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. I think I just wrote down, because I thought it was interesting. I think Rodney refers to himself as looking like a lemon or something like that. And now that's an expression that I use a lot. But I tried to look up the kind of etymology of it and I couldn't find anything. It's not a rhyming slang as far as I could find. So I'm assuming you haven't got any wild ideas, but...
Because isn't that as an extension from waiting around like a lemon? Or is that two different things? Or is it just
Yeah, I mean, that's another way you can use it. I'm hanging around on my own like a lemon. But I still feel that means to be like an idiot rather than referencing the fact that you're waiting around.
Yeah, I don't think it really comes from anything. It's just a...
There's got to be something. Someone knows, all right? So someone send us a tweet because someone knows the etymology of lemon.
Funny enough, when you say about a lemon, I did write a note to say that there's not any... Cockney rhyming slang sentences or bits, but there are a couple of words that just come up with a lemon, maybe one and more of a colloquial or whatever, but he says pins for legs and a few other stuff, but nothing really that I was really going to address. I just said there was a few occasional slang words in there.
So then after that complete failure, Dell comes up with an incredibly elaborate plan involving one of them walking in and out and talking of Rolls Royces and moving cars, and Rodney quite rightly points out that it's a ridiculous idea. That obviously made me chuckle because that's a thing I've heard of people doing before when trying to pick up girls, like coming up with these incredibly long, elaborate plans and lies to make themselves look good. They never work and they're always a complete waste of time. But, you know, they're giving it a go, and Dell is typically quite successful. I don't think he's nearly as successful as he says he is. Like he mentions earlier in the episodes, he always gets the part-time models and the air hostesses. He never does in any of the episodes we ever see. So clearly got a slightly optimistic outlook on his own abilities there.
I did write about the guaranteed four things. He said, I didn't list them off, but he says that, you know, the girls he goes with are guaranteed four things, something like getting treated right in a steak meal and stuff like this. And I kind of found myself like kind of believing him, really. Like it was kind of one of those believable things. And then I thought, actually, considering he is almost built up to be some kind of a player, or he's had loads of different relationships and so on, and all of the flings that you have, of which there actually isn't that many in the series before Raquel comes along or stays permanently, is he unjust or not good to any of them? I think actually...
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's ever unfaithful in any way. I think he is good.
He's normally quite smitten.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is like, you know, soppy, really. But I think he's also, there is a part of it that's like, he's a man of the times. And there is, like, as we've pointed out before in the show, some quite sexist opinions and things, but for his time, I think he was very progressive. And like you say, he's never, he's never unfaithful to anyone that kind of jumps out of me, at least. I don't think so. Of course, except for the time that he's on a break with Raquel in one of the Christmas specials. But that's a bit of a unique and weird one, which we'll definitely discuss, obviously, at the time. That's a long way to go until then. But yeah, no, I think it's a fair point. He is pretty good most of the time. We'll definitely keep a note of that as we move forward to see if we're right, or maybe there were some quite terrible things we forgot. We'll see. So after all this elaborate planning, it all is eventually for naught, as the girls end up being picked up by a couple of other guys while they're prattin' about. And so after some complaining, it looks like they're then going to approach some other girls, which they were eyeing up earlier, but instead Dale insults them and is, I guess, he doesn't really insult them. He is kind of insensitive, but
it's more thoughtless than...
Yeah, it's thoughtless rather than being actually cruel. He's not saying, like, I would never talk to you guys because I think you're ugly. He's just like, he might as well be asking a couple of guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's not meant with any maliciousness, but no. It's just ironic that it comes straightly after he says, you know, I'm such a nice guy. I'm very nice. And then he's supposed to tell these women, oh, yeah, good, but yeah, bye.
I mean, to be fair, those women, he literally goes up to them and goes, we're on our way home now. How do you fancy it? And they're like, bang up for it. So I thought that was very weird. They'd spent the whole night planning to get these other two girls, where all they had to do to get this other pair was just go up to them and go, do you want to leave with us? Which seemed too easy, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can pull a two, mate. Like, I mean, I'm going to start off high, eh? But he's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and all cities work? Well, la la la
la la la la la la la la. Go on then, so what do you think?
I think it's fine. I think it has all the things in there make you... It's very close to home, basically. You think for any family, you know, it's got the Christmas dinner in there, the being a bit bored, the crappy TV, and then just a little thing at the end. I think it's deliberately not too crazy. It's just a very casual episode. But I liked it. There's some diamond moments in there. As I said, it's pretty world building for Grandad, for sure. And I think it... The Christmas day is exactly what I would expect to come from those three. Like, it's nothing unexpected or something wild in there, and it's just believable. I think it feels like a genuine Christmas day in their house.
Yeah, I definitely get that. In that kind of first half of the episode, it does feel very natural, and that's obviously what they were going for. But I can't help thinking that it was a pretty boring episode compared to the others. Like, by the standard set, I mean, we've said about a couple of other episodes that we thought they maybe weren't our favourites, but actually when watching them and analysing them, we ended up really, really enjoying them and thinking they were great. I didn't find that so much this time. Maybe it's because I was expecting that. I was thinking, oh, this is another one of those episodes that I don't necessarily think is that great, but I'm sure when I watch it, I'll really love it. And actually I was like, nah, still not one of the particularly great ones.
We always sort of come up with the summary at the end and rating the episode. The truth is that there's not a single bad episode, I don't think. I don't think in all of the series there's one episode where I'd say, I literally don't want to watch because it's that bad. They're all good. That is a good episode. It didn't have any big laugh-out-loud moments. It didn't have moments that are iconic, although the giblet turkey thing is quite a memorable scene. But yeah, it was just fine. Middle of the road episode for sure.
I think by its own standards, it's low. But as an episode of TV, it is middle of the road. But
bear in mind, we're still only on the first series. Though. There's loads more to go, and the episodes get longer and everything.
Well, exactly. This is the thing. I mean, I think I've been almost pleasantly surprised by just how good the first series has been, how well it has aged, and all that kind of stuff. And I think, especially given that this is like a Christmas special, and I know, like, especially these days, and again, later in this, in Only Fools and Horses, very much so, Christmas specials are always bigger and bolder and better. And where this was the opposite, it was like the Christmas special, and it was dull, and I think there's a reason none of the others are like that.
That's funny, I hadn't thought about that. I think that's true of a lot of sitcoms, they go balls out for the Christmas.
Well, exactly,
episodes.
Yeah. But then they really didn't here. It was a bit, yeah, it's a bit underwhelming. But, you know, still things to enjoy. But I'm definitely looking forward to the next episode, which is...
Do you know? I know.
Not a clue.
It's Long Legs of the Law.
Long Legs of the Law, nice. This is definitely one of those episodes I've not watched as many times as some of the others.
Yeah, for sure. But more importantly, that's the end of the first series. That's our first series done. Before we even look on to series two, we've just finished episode 7 of series
Dusted.
1.
Dusted.
Yeah, yeah. Quite an achievement. It's taken logistically a lot of time and effort to get to where we are, as silly as it may seem. But we've managed to do that. I think we might put a little footnotes at the end of this series. I was thinking maybe just a little short episode. There's definitely a few things that happen behind the scenes that come into building this, which I think if you've enjoyed the series, you'll be really interested to listen. So have a little listen out to that if you have an interest. Otherwise, join us for series 2 when we're going to do Long Legs of the Law as the first one, where Rodney gets himself shacked up with a policewoman, much to the dismay of, well, everyone, but obviously Dylan Grandad.
No, it's good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how big the changes are from series 1 to 2. I think I often just kind of amalgamate series 1, 2 and 3 all together as like the Grandad era.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see just how much things change as you go, and if we see a big difference in budget and scale and the number of characters and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. But I'm very pleased and proud of the first season. I'm surprised it worked as a concept. Well, I think it worked as a concept. I mean, for all we know, not a single other fucker in the world has listened to it. But so we'll find. I hope someone has and they've enjoyed it. Do let us know if you have. Twitter and Facebook are the places to find us. All the links are in the show notes as always. And yeah, please do let us know what you think and, you know, any ideas you've got for forthcoming episodes and stuff.
So we will close off this episode and the series with a little Cliff Richard, very 80s. So we'll sign off with that one. Thank you for joining us for this episode and the series, and I hope we will see you for series 2 coming very soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook /Only Fools Brothers, or on Twitter we're at Only Fools Bros, or if you want to send us a longer message, you can email us at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Also, really appreciate it if you could give us some sort of rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks very much. Goodbye. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday went by. Was on a Tuesday.